Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. On the way to talking with our mayor in this re-election in this election campaign, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary specialty and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, call 1-800-492-5538, or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner on our website, and all the information for the University of Maryland Medical Systems will be right there. And Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, welcome. Good to have you back in the studio.
It's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to the Facebook. There are already questions there on both Facebook pages. And we will get to those questions as well on those Facebook pages. But 410-319-8888. And I see, Charles, you're the first caller up. We're going to come to you in just a minute. We'll start here and then go back and forth between the listeners and my questions and get you all on the air at 410-319-8888. So, welcome. Question number one is, I think, a lot of people's minds. We've had, I don't know how many debates there have been in the city so far for this campaign. Two of them have been broadcast here on WEAA, one that was at the Temple Memorial Church, AME, and the other one at Shiloh that we broadcast that had a good thousand or more people in the audience. And so there was a lot of people who are upset that the mayor doesn't come to these debates.
I'm very sorry that upset some people, primarily my opponents, but my primary focus is that of being the mayor. While there are some others that have a little bit more flexibility in their schedule, I'm very dedicated to making sure that I'm meeting the needs of the voters and the taxpayers who I serve. And so I certainly am pleased that I'm scheduled to do, I think, either four or five forums. I think that's at least as many or more than any sitting mayor has done in the last two or three campaigns, so I feel comfortable about that number. And I think it's the right mix when I also have the responsibility of doing the job. You know, there's a time for campaigning, and there's also, I must have time to devote to serving the city.
Now, some people, not saying that the debates that I was part of the panel on were more important than any other debate, not saying that at all, but the two places we did do those debates, one was sponsored by 33 organizations that were some of very important groups in this town in terms of community organizations, from IMA, which has already endorsed you, to the NAACP and CPHA, a number of huge number of groups that sponsored that debate. There were well over 1,000 people, perhaps more, in an overflow audience at Shiloh Baptist. How do you make a decision on which debates become important and which are not important? Some people, this is one example, some people were saying in the audience, well, is this disrespect to the black church community because in neither places did you show up?
Well, it's unfortunate that it was interpreted in that. It certainly, I meant no disrespect. I schedule months in advance for things, and while I appreciate their interest in hosting a forum, my schedule was already booked. And, you know, with respect to the Shiloh one, and I was sorry that I was unable to attend. That being said, with respect to the one at Empowerment Temple, I thought it was a bit curious if they wanted to have the sitting mayor come, that they would host it on National Night Out, a night that is celebrated for the last 27 years around the country as a day where the community and public safety officers come together to celebrate the partnership. I mean, this is a city that struggles with violence, struggles with working on community and police relations. And I just thought it was curious that they would choose National Night Out to host a forum. So I spent a significant amount of time crisscrossing the city, spending time with community associations that put a lot of time and effort into their national night out events. There was music performance and kids performances and cookouts and things that people, you know, all across our city were celebrating the community, celebrating the work that they're doing with the police department. I'm just curious that no one that put the forum on at the temple either was, you know, I don't know if they were not a part of their community association or not plugged in. You know, there's hundreds of days during this campaign to schedule it, but to schedule it on National Night Out and think that the sitting mayor was going to be there, I thought that was a bit curious.
Speaking of that, then we'll go to the first caller, Charles, and then the email and Facebook question. Another caller, Alex, is lined up there at 410-319-8888. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake is in the house to talk about this campaign and her seeking to become mayor once again, or at least to win the Democratic nomination on the way to the general election. You're talking about the safety in neighborhoods. There was a real controversy that still is a controversy in certain areas with the incident that involved Shom Rim in northwest Baltimore. And there are people that argue, and I've been wanting to ask this question, as I've asked others as well, should Shom Rim continue to exist and function as a group? Should it disband and all groups like that become groups that are that represent all the community and not just a small segment of that community? Should it be mixed with more secular people from the Jewish community, mixed with African Americans and Latinos who live in that community, to have a real community patrol and not one that seems to incite a lot of racial anxiety and anger?
I think it was a very unfortunate incident, and I think the community that's there, the Orthodox community as well as their neighbors, all wished it hadn't happened, because that is a community that's been struggling for generations with strengthening relations. You know, it is a diverse community, and while it certainly it has been an ongoing struggle to maintain, constructive and positive and, building their relations, and that was a real setback. That being said, while I certainly think it was an unfortunate incident, my hope is that overall the desire to work together as a community would override or be the call at the end of the day, that they would redouble their efforts to work together instead of scrapping it. I mean, Shom Rim certainly has its place. It's an active group. It's with an eye and an eye on partnership with public safety. And to me, it's a call to do better, not necessarily a call for them to be disbanded.
I'm going to press this too much. There's too many other things to talk about. But mm-hmm. Would it not be better in a community like that to have a community-wide patrol group? Like, I was in one when I lived in Windsor Hills for 25 years. It wasn't sectarian at all. It belonged to all the people in that community. Wouldn't it be a better and broader thing to have a unified patrol as opposed to having a patrol with nothing but the Orthodox Jewish community and then another patrol that is mostly African-American? And doesn't that seem to be almost counterproductive to do that?
I think there's lots of room to grow in that community.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
410-319-8888. Charles, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Question. There are three administrators who are presiding over, to say the least, turbulent departments in Baltimore City. What do you expect to do with the head of police department, the fire department, and the combined DHC have Baltimore Housing? Mm-hmm. You expect those people to remain in office? Not in office, but they're all appointed by you. So do we expect to see them again, given what's going on with the city and their departments and how people in Baltimore are being treated? And by the way, your answer about not appearing at the debates is really disingenuous. It comes off as highly arrogant and contemptuous. So that's what you're having to deal with. I'll wait for your answers.
I certainly didn't intend for it to come off as any of those things. I have a sincere heart. I'm sorry that did not come through over the airways. Again, I'm looking forward to participating. I've participated, I think, two already. I'm looking forward to participating in at least two more, maybe three. I take very seriously the opportunity to talk to voters. And while the forums are certainly one way, I'm sure you know, Mark, that there are lots of ways to do that. And I do that on a daily basis, community meetings, meet and greets that are hosted by community leaders that want me to speak, you know, in a smaller setting with the voters. So, you know, again, I'm sorry that this gentleman interpreted it as disingenuous and arrogant. That's certainly not the manner in which I intended it to come across the airways. With respect to each agency, you know, I think just like I work for, you know, when you are an elected official, every day is like a job interview. You know, you are working for, you know, the taxpayers, the voters of your city every single day, and you get evaluated every day. And I don't treat my department heads any differently. You know, we are not satisfied with what was done yesterday. Yeah, every department head strives to do more and to do better, and all of them are evaluated on a regular basis. And you know, what I look for is results. I look for outcomes. I look for, you know, are we a safer city? Are we a cleaner city? You know, and you know, what are our goals in each of those things? And like they have been evaluated on a regular basis during the 18 or so months I've been mayor, they will continue to be subsequently.
If you had, so you just push his question a little bit further to two points. If you had, A, do you want mayoral control of the schools back? B, will you, if you do, do you intend to do something in the state legislature to make that move and fight for it? And C, if you did have that, mm-hmm. would Dr. Andres Alonso, what's your assessment of his performance, and do you think he should stay as the CEO of our city schools?
I have a great partnership mm-hmm. with Dr. Alonso. I think if you look at where the school system was prior to him being here and where it is today, we've made a lot of progress. That being said, there's much, much more work that needs to be done. And I look forward to working with Dr. Alonso and the school board to get us there. You know, we, if you take a look at the mayoral control, I remember what the school system was like prior to the city-state partnership. My daughter, I'm a product of the public school. My daughter goes to public school. I can't imagine, I don't think there were any and if there were any, you know, city council members or the mayor that had their child in public schools at the our city public school at the time, we have come a long way. And while I think everyone acknowledges there's a lot more to do, a lot of the progress that we've been able to make is because of this partnership and because of the resources that we get because of this partnership. And while I think, you know, sometime in the future, it's certainly worth taking a look at, I am encouraged when you take a look at where we started and where we are today that we've made progress. And I know that there's more to do and that we can do it under this structure.
Let me go back to the phones. A lot of people are calling in. We have a ton of emails. We'll try to get through as many of these as we can. 410-319-8888. And while I have a lot of questions, since so many are calling in, let me make this your show and see what you bring up on the airways. 410-319-8888. Alex, you're on the air next.
Yes, I am a lifelong Baltimore City resident, product of Baltimore City Public Schools, and my wife and I have a 5-month-old son and recent homeowner living in West Hills. I grew up in Emerson Village, graduated from Poly. I have a couple of concerns, first and foremost, regarding my son. When he becomes school age, my wife and I share the concern of the school system, particularly early childhood development as far as education. I would like to hope that the school system will continue to improve, but I also have concerns about the taxes in Baltimore City, homeowners' taxes obviously being the highest in the state, us getting hit harder than any other jurisdiction in the state. Is that going to continue? Do you see That's getting reduced. Mm-hmm. And also the crime. Shortly after we purchased our home in West Hills, there were incidents, I'm sure you're both aware, two young men were killed maybe 3 weeks after we moved into our home. And I share my wife's concern over the crime. Now, that was, I guess you might call an isolated incident, but nonetheless, being a city resident, I've seen crime. I've been a victim of crime more than one occasion. So I have those concerns, and I would like to get the mayor's response on those concerns that my wife and I have.
Okay, Alex, thanks so much for your participation in this program and for your questions. Mayor Rawlings Blake.
So first, congratulations to Alex and his family on purchasing a home in West Hills. That was, if I didn't grow up in Ashburton, I would have grown up in West Hills. It's a lovely, not by my choice, you know, clearly by my parents' choice, because
right.
I didn't pick it. But congratulations on that. And you know, when I say congratulations, I mean it sincerely. And thank you, because you are voting with your feet on and voting that you support and believe in the future of our city. So I want to thank him for that, and to say that we've made a lot of progress. We've expanded pre-K seats in the city schools, and we are not just expanding the seats, but the performance. Two out of three of our kids are arriving, you know, going to first grade ready, and you know, and we're working very hard to improve those numbers. You know, you asked about Dr. Alonzo and, you know, would I support him, whatever. You know, the thing for me is I support our kids. So when we talk about the progress that we've made since the city school, the state city partnership, you know, I see progress, and I know that there's more to do. So just like with the pre-K slots, there's more to do. We need more good quality pre-K slots throughout the city so Alex and his wife can have a great place for their son. I know for sure in that community, that is one of the areas that we're focusing on because of the expansion of the population that is anticipated with the Uplands development. Where the school system and the planning department, we've been working together to assess what the future needs are going to be for that community around elementary school education. So I would say to him, beyond thank you, I would say stay tuned as we plan for the future in that area. And with respect, I think his last thing was about taxes. It is a big issue in a city. It is a challenge when we're trying to grow the city. And I take the issue very seriously. That's why I don't like playing games with it. I think it's irresponsible to suggest that we can slash the property tax in half and still continue to thrive. At some point, if you're going to cut up to $400 million out of the city's revenue, you have to be willing to say, what are you going to reduce? Where are you going to make the cuts? I hope that the citizens don't accept a mere city government is bloated. You know, that's irresponsible. And we see what happens even today in Washington when you have this irresponsible, you know, just cut, and nobody's talking about where. It's putting everyday citizens at risk, and we need to be honest and forthcoming about what we are exactly talking about when we're talking about these plans. That's why I have a achievable initial program, 20 cents by 2020, to start us on a trend toward a lower property tax. I think it is achievable with the slots revenue, as well as making reductions in creating efficiencies. I've already created those efficiencies. I was able to close one of the largest, if not the largest, budget deficits in the city's modern history, my first year as mayor. So I know a little bit about creating efficiencies in government, and I look forward to doing more, as well as working with financial experts on a 10-year financial plan so we can continue to save money for our citizens and continue to offer targeted property tax relief. And that's why my program is targeted to our Baltimore City homeowners first.
Two questions that follow with that, and then we're going to go to our next callers. Kenneth, you're up next, and we have We did an email here and a question from Facebook, but the email question is directly related to this, and so is my follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Matt from Patterson Park writes in to say, please ask the mayor why she opposes the proposed law that would tax vacant and uninhabitable houses at a higher rate than occupied properties. She supported the bill when she was city council president, but she decided to oppose it after she became mayor. I discussed this issue in an interview with Mark and Anthony during an interview on March 22, 2010. Both Jody Landers and Otis Raleigh are proposing a 10% vacant tax in their property tax overhaul plans. Good question.
The issue for me is the goal. What's the end goal, and what do you want? To reduce the number of vacant homes. There was a proposal that I was in favor of at one time, and once I developed my vacants-to-value strategy, we picked another tool to get to that same end. And the city council was helpful with us to get that done, and that was a $900 citation that we're using aggressively and strategically in areas where we know that there are vacancy. We have an issue with vacancy, and there's also demand in those areas. The problem is that there are some areas where you put a tax on what's a premium, and the problem is we're creating bills on properties that are some of them are worth less. So the goal for me, when I took a look at it, I said, what's the end goal? The end goal for me is to reduce the number of vacants. And by using those targeted, doing targeted enforcement with the increased citation, we're getting to the goal of owners either fixing up their property, and we've had thousands of permit requests subsequent to our strategy taking root and getting kicked off. Targeted enforcement, so these individuals either fix their property up so they are not a blight on the community, or they'll sell it to someone who will.
Why the mutual exclusive to have a higher tax on vacants, people hold these houses and just rot in neighborhoods, as well as have the vacant to value program that, mm-hmm. that was started in housing? They're not mutually exclusive, and it seems to me that that there are a lot of ways to start getting these houses out of the hands of people. We're not going to take care of them. And even with the program that you started, which has gone further than anybody else's, I will say, but it only affects 4% of the houses even owned by the city. I mean, there's got to be – some people think there needs to be a harder, deeper push for us to deal with this vacant problem in the city.
Well, the vacant problem that we have, the vacancy value – while it streamlines the process, cuts the red tape for the city-owned properties, we also are addressing the ones that aren't city-owned with the targeted enforcement. And I don't think it's mutually exclusive. What I'm saying is this is the route that I decided to incorporate into my vacants to value initiative.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Kenneth in Pikesville. You're on the air.
Thank you. Mayor Rollinsbrick, I was glad to hear your comments. I wanted just to make a comment about the initial caller, Mr. Charles, who said you sounded disingenuous about your comment. Rather than have you run around the city attending debates, in your office, in the community, is where you need to be. You don't have time, like you said, with the other candidates who have probably not as much work to do as you do, to run around and do debates. I think that your work being done in the office is more of a precedent and having to convince people that you are the right person for the job when you're already doing it right now.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I didn't have a question, just wanted to make that comment.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kenneth. Well, let me read one from Aaron. Aaron writes in, it's very clear to me that all of the seemingly intractable problems faced by the city, the common element is population decline. Schools, crime, infrastructure, and budget problems all begin to organically resolve given a convincing reversal of population decline. This will require a huge shift the level of confidence that people feel in our elected leadership. You have put forth what economists have branded a far too timid property tax reduction proposal, along with claims that city government is efficient and fine the way it is. These are policies and attitudes that got us here. What, if anything, do you propose that will create rapid and meaningful population growth over the next few years?
So first, I've never, ever said that city government is fine the way it is. I said that instead, I say that we strive every single day to do better than we did the day before. I say routinely to my team and to my constituents that we are not worried about, just much like Schaefer was, we're not worried about the accomplishments of yesterday. We're very focused on what we can do to make our city better in the future. So I just want to make that clear. And while I'm sure there are economists that would suggest that my plan is timid, there's certainly many who think it's not only responsible, it's achievable, and it's a way to make sure that we don't fall prey to what's happening in many cities where they make drastic cuts to things like the police department and the homicide rate then spikes up 50%. You know, when we talk about cuts, we talk about reduction in property tax, we're talking about slashing the city's revenue. So we also need to talk about what services do we want on the chopping block. So, you know, I appreciate that he's found an economist that thinks it's a timid plan. I've heard from many in the field that it is responsible, it is achievable, it's realistic, and it will help us head toward in the right direction.
Now, when you talk about reductions and cities that are facing reductions and mm-hmm. cut budgets, we've done the same. And look what happens to our Park and Recs department. That's been cut over the last 20 years by incredible amounts, while the police department's budget has risen. And some people think that's a skewed way of looking at things, that the more we take away from Parks and Rec, the more crime we build, the less we have for our kids. The kids forum that I witnessed with the mayoral candidates over at the Carmelo Anthony Center, that's what the kids were saying. They said, who is talking about us? But not just the schools, but what we need after schools. Rec centers closing, no places to go, no programs for children, no putting people, let's say, who are ex-felons back to work to kind of reduce violence in our communities. When we make decisions about where we spend money, it always seems to go towards public safety, but not towards recreation or our children.
Yeah, I understand the frustration. That's why I work so hard on my plan with community members to restructure the way that we treat and deal with recreation centers. I said from my time on the council that we needed to be more strategic and more efficient in our spending of money when it comes to recreation and parks. And that's why I put together a group of community leaders. They've worked with Greg Baer across the city to make sure that we try to figure out what is it that communities want to see out of their recreation centers? What is it that they would make them want to use them? And we got the answer. That task force did an assessment of each and every one of the recreation centers that we have. And we even sent them out to look at best practices in other regions. And the consensus was they wanted larger, better staffed recreation centers that would be community centers, ones that would have programming for young people all the way up to seniors, ones that would have kitchens so they could have expanded classes, they could host events. And we've cut ribbons this year on two of those. So I'm proud of the fact that we not just listened, but we took those recommendations and we're putting them into action. And we're transitioning. We're looking for partners to operate some of our recreation centers. We're not, you know, as in years past, just putting recreation centers on the chopping mm-hmm. block. We're looking for ways that community groups and not-for-profits can partner with us to keep that asset alive and open to the public. And I'm excited about the possibilities. That being said, we're also very we want to make sure that we're being strategic with our funds for our youth, and that's why I developed the Mayor's Youth Cabinet, and we're working with across agencies and pulling in other stakeholders to make sure that the $385 million that we spend in services and programs to youth are spent and leveraging them to the max, getting the most bang for our buck and making sure that we're serving the needs of our young people.
410-319-8888. We have to take a very brief break, it looks like, and we're going to come right back. And we're going to come right back to, let's see, who do we have here? Raymond, Alfred, James, Charles, our callers waiting lined up. We have emails from Jermaine and many other people, and we're going to probably come back to a question from Darius that he put on Facebook. 410-319-8888 as we talk with the mayor, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, as she seeks the nomination to become who remain mayor. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake in our series of conversations with all those who are seeking to become mayor or remain mayor, in this case, in the city of Baltimore in the Democratic primary. We've invited all the mayoral candidates once again to come with us and join us here in the last 2 weeks before the primary. You'll have a chance to hear everybody. All that will be on our website as well. Number here is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Or you can log on to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, and we'll read one of the questions there in a minute. But let's go first to Raymond. You're on the air.
Yes. Thanks for taking my question. My question concerns the Grand Prix. I was wondering if your administration showed enough due diligence in terms of setting this up, especially in terms of community involvement. I don't recall any public announcement on this or a community forum or discussion. It seemed like it was just decision was made, got the backing from city council, and just sort of ran with it. And my concern is, you know, I know you say the funds that were earmarked for the streets and things like that had could only be used for the streets, but I wonder if they were mostly used for the benefit of the people who are running the Grand Prix rather than for the citizens of Baltimore, and whether or not this was appropriate use for that money. Just an old concern, the fact that we'd signed a 3 or 5 year deal and that it commits us for a period of time. So I'm mostly concerned about was there due diligence on part of your administration in terms of the public?
Definitely. I put the citizens first. I wouldn't even consider it until I heard from the organizers that they had the support of the communities, the impacted communities. So I didn't even listen to any plans. I didn't even start to do any work on, you know, whether it was a good idea or a bad idea until I heard that the communities, the impacted communities, were supportive of it. So
you say impacted, you mean communities just around the site? How about the citizens of Baltimore itself, who, you know, it's citizens of Baltimore City money, and it's not just the areas, neighborhoods around the Inner Harbor that's being impacted. I think the entire city of Baltimore is being impacted with the diversion of these funds.
Well, I think that's a bit of a mischaracterization. The funds are federal funds that can be used only for the large primary roads. These were scheduled road repaving efforts. And the only thing we did was truncate the schedule from a 2-year plan for repaving, shortened it to allow us the opportunity to have the race. So they weren't diverted. Moreover, we spend well over 90% of the funds that we have, transportation funds, for neighborhood repaving efforts. We just purchased a new repaver that's able to do even more, and we are on pace to set a record for the second year in a row for the most lane miles in the neighborhoods paved in a year.
Do you think that things like Grand Prix are a risky investment for the city to think about in terms of recouping money as also making money? I mean, some cities have done away with the Grand Prix, have canceled them because they are worried about the money coming back. Grand Prix, from what I've been reading, doesn't have the greatest track record these days in meeting its financial obligations.
I mean, there are certainly cities where it didn't work, but there are cities like Long Beach where the street race put them on the map. And, you know, we had the mayor of Long Beach here for the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and he was dying to talk to members of the media so he could talk about the positive impact the race has had on the renaissance of their city. and you know that not too many people in your field were interested in talking to him. So it is certainly risky, but while you're saying it's risky, it's bold. And as I said, I'm not interested in being a timid leader. I don't think we would have sent William Donald Schafer out with such regalia if he were a timid leader. He was a bold thinker that took chances and saw bigger things for Baltimore. And while you know, some people are going kicking and screaming, I see bigger things for Baltimore, and this is just the start of it.
410-319-8888. Charles, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Madam Mayor?
Well,
great,
welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll be very brief. First of all, I want to thank you for stepping up at a time that our city was in deep crisis, just tremendous amount of pain, and you provided us with healing, not only with healing, but with you kept, you know, with navigated us to keeping us on afloat under some very difficult circumstances beyond your control, indeed. So you've done a very sound job. Now, my question is strictly, the question I have here is strictly for the benefit of those who don't know it, who may not know any better. Would you please, you know, tell the people who's running the city, that Martin O'Malley, the governor's not running the city, that you're running the city, that you're the mayor of the city, because some people, I think, don't know that. They're confused about that.
So Thank you
once again for such a good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, part of being a woman in politics is you deal with sexism at all levels. So, you know, I'm sure if you ask many women that are in government, you will hear them say that they are accused that someone else is pulling the strings because, you know, that clearly, you know, a woman is not doing it. So people are looking for who's really doing the job. And I am very clear with everyone on my staff, in communities, that I work for the people of Baltimore. That is my passion. That is what gets me up in the morning. I've never been confused about it. If I didn't, you know, believe you me, if I didn't let my father run the way I did my politics, I'm not going to let the governor or anyone else. I'm proud of having their endorsements. But I work for the people of Baltimore, and anybody that says different is either doesn't know me, or they're saying it for their own political gain, which is unfortunate. And I'm a big girl. I can take it. It's just not accurate.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And James, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Stein. Good afternoon, Madam Mayor.
Good afternoon, James.
Hey, the main question I have, because, you know, I could sit and ask you a dozen questions. We could go on all day about this. But about the slots deal, which seems to have changed form several times. We've seen several incarnations of it. I'm wondering about the minority business part of it. Apparently, you waived the requirements. Could you address that?
Excuse me. Part of what I think just happened was there was a challenge to the state. There was a challenge to the state commission's minority participation language in the contract. And I'm not sure if it was waived or amended.
Okay. Well, that's I'll take that for now. Thank you.
But can I just say this? With every project that we do in the city, we have very strict and clear minority participation, women participation goals, and we take it very seriously. If companies don't meet them, many are disqualified from doing business with the city. Their bids are disqualified. So we take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. I also charge my economic development team to make sure that we're doing a lot of outreach to make sure that small business, local businesses, minority and women-owned businesses know what opportunities are out there, whether they're government opportunities or, you know, the work that we do to strengthen the small businesses that we have that don't have any government work. You know, I take that that work very seriously. And while the the language as it was written might not have passed legal muster. We work very hard to make sure that there's minority firms are represented at the table.
Now, when it comes to slots, just to push this a little further, then we'll go to some of the other questions people calling in or writing in. A lot of people think that, and will write across this country, that it's a very dangerous process and precedent to be set in cities trying to ensure their future financial viability through gambling, through slots. And you had to give back $6 million to whoever gets this deal now, money that was going to go to surrounding neighborhoods, but now will go to that company so they can refurbish streets, whatever they have to do.
No. Not
the funds is wrong?
We're not diverting funds. The city is putting an infrastructure investment. If they're the impact funds that go to the community, will go to the community.
What someone quoted as saying is that the $6 million the $6 million from a pot of cash that was created to ease the impact of casino on surrounding neighborhoods and apply the money to required infrastructure improvements. In other words, to change it from where it was going to go back to neighborhoods to letting those companies use it for infrastructure development. I mean, that's A. And B, is it a dangerous way to kind of think about how we can lower property taxes basing it on casino deals?
So the city will keep its commitment to the impacted communities. And the payment will not make us unable. You know, we will still be able to maintain the commitment we made to the impacted communities. That being said, you know, I think if I had a magic wand, you know, we would how we could make that kind of money if I had a magic wand. Maybe it would be, I don't know. I can't think of anything. That being said, I'm sure there are mayors and governors all over the country like other ways, you know, additional ways that have less impact on communities and, you know, don't involve potential patrons that have addiction issues. You know, I think I'm sure the people wish, you know, I wish there were other ways. I think that being said, I think the voters were clear. They spoke loud and clear that they wanted a slots parlor, wanted it in the city of Baltimore, and wanted that money to go toward property tax reduction in schools, and that's what it's going to do.
So a couple questions here. I have to do with money, then we'll come back to the phones and get these other emails in. Amber, David, Casey, we're coming to your calls. We have on Facebook page. I'd be interested to know if the mayor has any plan in mind which might help remove some impediments which cause difficulties for small business owners. As an anecdotal example, my wife rents a space for her business and is not allowed to place a simple sandwich sign on the sidewalk to attract customers. Moreover, getting a permit to hang the sign from a building is a very complex and expensive ordeal, which has become an obstacle to her growth and possible success in a neighborhood which is still in the growing stages in her type of retail effort. Given how readily our city offers large tax breaks for bigger business owners and developers at the waterfront, it seems unfair to choke the progress of smaller businesses trying to set up local economies outside the now high-priced waterfront area.
You ready for me?
Yep.
So with respect to the sandwich boards, that's something that we're grappling with. There are lots of reasons. I understand the need to advertise your business, but one of the things that was even reiterated at the Disabilities Forum Forum or when I had another meeting with a meet and greet and some individuals that were limited in sight had an issue because they said, you know, they're walking around the city and, you know, one day they're walking on the sidewalk and it's clear. The next day there's a sandwich board and it's, you know, if you are unsighted, it poses a safety risk. So, you know, it's a balancing act, and we certainly understand the need to advertise, but it has to be done in a way that is safe for all of Baltimore citizens.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
With respect to the, opening a business and advertising, getting permits, we are streamlining the process for how do you open a business in Baltimore. I think the launch will either be At the end of this month or the beginning of next month, we'll be launching our website. It's Soup to Nuts. You can start your business. You can go and you can do it online. The permits are there. The transparency is there. The predictability is there. We went out and surveyed small business owners across the city, talked about what the city was doing right, talked about what the city was doing wrong, and we have a website, a city program that we think addresses those needs, and I'm looking forward to launching it.
Do you think that, given talking about transparency, there was an issue here on the program not long ago with the Baltimore Development Corporation, with the owner of was it the ESPN Zone, who was given proposed to give him a $3 million tax break, and it was a closed meeting. Now, I've asked this of every mayoral candidate. Should every meeting of the Baltimore Development Corporation be open to the public to hear what's going on? Not to say, give me $150 to give you a report, but to be open to the public when it comes to using tax breaks, our tax money, and they're not. It's the most untransparent organization in the entire city.
I certainly think there's room for improvement when it comes to transparency. To say every meeting, people are talking about, sometimes proprietary business information, and that shouldn't be open to the public. And so at the end of the day, yes, we can improve the transparency. No, not every single meeting needs to be available to the open to the public, but every deal should be defendable, and it should be clear the terms of the deal that are recommended. The Baltimore Development BDC recommends financing deals, and then the process for approving them is a very open process. Many, if not all of them, go through the city council process or the board of estimates process, where the public has a chance to take a look. You know, the issues are brought to light.
But when a politically powerful developer, mm-hmm. like David Corish in this instance, and there are many others we could name, are asking for a $3 million tax reduction or rebate.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that deserve complete transparency when people with that kind of means and that kind of political power and economic might are asking for that kind of reduction when citizens in Baltimore pay these high property taxes? I mean, isn't there a disconnect? Don't you see a disconnect here for people?
So that deal should be transparent. I agree.
But it wasn't, because people were kicked out of the room. They weren't even allowed to stay to hear what was going on. They were told to leave the room.
So I'm it's not only proprietary information. Sometimes businesses' financial information is discussed. I wasn't at that meeting, so I can't. I don't know exactly what was being discussed when individuals were being asked to leave. That being said, the terms of the deal should be made public. The proposed deal. If BDC is going to recommend that abatement, the term should be made public, and they will be.
Stephanie Rawlings Blake, our mayor, is in the studio. 410-319-8888. She's seeking the nomination to become the Democratic nominee to continue in this race to become mayor. And let's see, Amber, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Amber. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, Mayor Blake. I don't think you sounded arrogant at all. I think you sounded intelligent and professional, answered all the questions. I'm for you 100,000%. And I'd like to know, why did you hire Peter O'Malley as your chief of staff? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
So I had a group of individuals that were helping me as Sophie transitioned, my former chief of staff. We looked around. We were looking for someone that had experience in that position. We were looking for someone that was experienced, not just in that position, but with Baltimore City. And Peter's name popped up. I'd worked with him before when he was working in city government, working as a consultant in city government, developing city stat. I'd worked with him on several campaigns. I'd also worked with him when he was chief of staff to Jim Smith, county executive, who I have a lot of respect for. And at the end of the day, I wanted someone who could hit the ground running. again, who had experience in the position of chief of staff to a city executive, municipal executive, as well as someone who knew enough about our city government that there would not there wouldn't be a learning curve. And I got all those with him.
410-319-8888. And Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, how's everybody doing this afternoon?
Well, welcome.
Hey, how are you, Mayor? Listen, I think we need to be candid when speaking about BDC. BDC is a flawed, you know, organization at this point. We've dealt with BDC on a number of levels, with giving out grants, with the community legacy program and things of that nature. But there are other things that BDC also does that where they're sorely lacking, which can help grow the city from a small business standpoint. And you're talking about we have an incubator program here in Baltimore that's being sorely underutilized. When you look at cities like Pittsburgh, like Youngstown, Ohio, they're utilizing their incubator program to help the ancillary small businesses also grow. And I think that's an area in which BDC can help out the smaller communities. Now, I guess my question would be, what are we going to do? What are you going to do to revamp BDC? And, ma'am, we have a small business forum that we've invited you to on Omar Muhammad's show on WEAA, and we'd like you guys to get back to us on it, you know, because there'll be a lot of small business owners there that can help with these processes.
So thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the call. We are in the process of restructuring BDC and the way they do business. We're working on priorities. What we've been doing is meeting with business leaders in the sectors that are our growth sectors across the city. In the same way that I asked community leaders, you know, how can the city be a better partner? We've had those conversations. We talked about the mission of BDC and how we should operate. We know that there's going to be a focus on small business development. We know that there's going to be a focus on advocacy. So we're attracting more businesses into the city. There is also a focus on increased funding to the Emerging Technology Center because I know while it certainly I wish it could have been more, but given the circumstances, I wanted to make sure that I at least did more than we did the year before to show that I understand that that's our future, that we have a great opportunity to grow jobs in through innovation, and I wanted to support those endeavors. So we are revamping all of BDC. We're doing it with the assistance and the consultation of business leaders in all the sectors, including small business. And my hope is that the new BDC will better reflect the needs of our city moving forward.
Let's go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. We can go to David. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, David. I didn't realize when I just said we have 90 seconds left, so it has to be like a 30-second question and a one-minute answer.
Good. I'll be real quick. Stephanie Blake, you have not shown up for most, and I'm going to say the vast majority of the forums here in Baltimore. I feel like you feel that you've already won this race, and you're better than us, and I'm a taxpaying citizen of Baltimore and have been for 46 years, and you haven't shown up to mix it up with the other candidates.
All right, let the mayor have her last minute here.
So thank you for being a taxpaying citizen of the city of Baltimore. I sincerely endeavor every day to do my job as mayor. I do not take this race for granted. I work hard every single day to ensure that we are doing the best that we can and better than we did the day before for our citizens and for our city. And I am very interested in participating in the forums. While I certainly, because I have a job that is very time intensive, I cannot accept every invitation. I'm looking forward to the four or five that that are scheduled as a way that we can mix it up, as you say, and talk about the issues. I've enjoyed the two that I've participated in, and I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to talk to more people in the future.
Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, thank you for joining us today. Maybe we'll catch you one more time before the election day, and that's good to have you on the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And we will have all the other candidates on in the next few weeks for their second turn here at the mic and invite the mayor back as well so you all can make a decision about who you want to vote for come election day. Stay with us. We'll be right back. When we come back, Dr. Johnny Slaughter is in the house. He's a veterinarian. He's a traveling vet. He's an acupuncturist. He knows more, lots about our animals, and it's time for you to line up the phones and get your questions answered by Dr. Johnny Slaughter. We'll be right back.